All right, am I on? Awesome. Well, thank you for that fabulous introduction. I appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
No pressure, right?
No pressure. If you're not good, we'll
just not call you back. Good. Awesome. Awesome. Just really quick, I'm just going to put some of my favorite resources right here on the stage for you guys to snap a pic of, et cetera. This one especially is called the Enneagram of Parenting, and it has like a little checklist for each personality type and what your kiddo may look like if they are that type, and then some good tips and tricks. So I just thought I would bring these, and I'll leave them there while you guys are in your discussion time. You can look at those. So, hi. It's good to be here with you guys this morning. Okay. Can I have my first slide? There we go. Awesome. Okay. So I saw that there's a few of us that don't exactly know what the Enneagram is. And most simply put, it's a personality typing tool. There is a lot of controversy and a lot of unknowns of its exact origin. Some people are like, is that a pentagram? Are we like into devil worship now? And I'm like, no. Enneagram. Ennea is 9 in Greek, and gram just means figure or diagram. So that's how you can remember it and know that that's where the definition comes from, is 9. 9 different spokes on this wheel. And I'd like to read a couple definitions of it. One of them, my favorite, is from Beatrice Chestnut, who's one of her books is down here. She says, the Enneagram describes personality types in terms of conscious patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving, along with their repressed shadow aspects. As a result, it is an excellent tool for doing the hardest part of conscious work, realizing, owning, and accepting your blind spots. I know that that sounds really like psychoanalytical and maybe like really big words, conscious, ego, blah, blah, blah. What the Enneagram does is it is providing us with a framework and a guide and a model for how we think, act, and feel as humans. Interestingly enough, all of us will relate with one of our 9 core types. But before we get to that, I want to back up a little bit. I want to give a few kind of framework for how the Enneagram works. First and foremost, if you hear nothing else from me today, I want you to hear these two things. One, the Enneagram is not scripture. It is not law. It's not supposed to replace therapy. It's not supposed to replace time with girlfriends, mom's night out, etc. It is a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like Myers-Briggs assessment, strength finders, love languages. These are all just tools, okay? There's just been a lot of like, oh my gosh, is this replacing like scripture and churches, blah, blah, blah. Nope, just a tool. So let's just see it just as that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the Enneagram is based solely on motivation. What motivates you as a person, not how you behave. Everything else I just listed, Myers-Briggs, Strength Finders, DISC, Colby A, all of those are all about behaviors. So a lot of us are going to look really similar because we behave similarly, but the why is very, very different. For instance, a type 2 and a type 9, we're going to see in a bit, they look very similar. They like to help people. Why they help people is different. One is trying to keep the peace, and the other one thinks that they are the end-all be-all to helping people, and they know the best way to do it. Okay? But their behavior looks the same. So how cool that we have this really unique tool that talks about why we do what we do. So because of that, as you can imagine, your type or your core type, it's really hard to assess online. Who has taken multiple Enneagram tests or assessments? Thank you for being honest, all of you. Did you find that you got different results with them? I did. I could list probably half the numbers that I tested as. And the reason is that we aren't yet in tune or self-aware to do, we don't know why we're doing what we do necessarily, okay? So today, we are going to have a morning of becoming self-aware. We're going to put some language to a lot of different things, all these different types, and it's going to, if you allow it to, it's going to permeate who you are as a person. Like Jill said, I am a coach, and there is an assessment I use that has 99% accuracy. If you're interested in that and you want to be coached through that, it's a little bit pricier than the ones that are out there that are like 10 bucks. It's like 60. But my email address is on your quick reference guide, and I'd be happy to set that up for you. And it's a fabulous tool. It comes with like a 22-page report on all these different ways to work on your self-development, etc., and a lot of different like nuances about the Enneagram and you specifically. So there's that. So we talked about motivation versus behavior. It's a tool. And then why is this important? Why am I even here? Why are we even talking about this? And here is why. If we don't know who we are and why we do what we do, what are we doing? It is so important that we know who we are so we can take care of ourselves and then in turn take care of each other, our children, our marital relationships. This is a big deal. Second, it is so important for empathy. Empathy for yourself. Give yourself a break. Give yourself some grace. Give yourself some understanding. You're going to now have some language to be like, oh, that's why I do that. When you do that, you're going to have empathy for yourself and then really for the people that are closest to you. Now, there are some rules or etiquette, they say, when it comes to the Enneagram of be careful that you don't come right out and type others if they're not asking you to do so, okay? Oh my gosh, you're such a two. Or, oh, you're such a five. Unless they're asking for that feedback, it's kind of not, you're not supposed to do that. Another thing is like weaponize it or use it to excuse yourself. Well, I'm an eight, so I get to be blunt and I get to be direct, so deal with it. No, you can't do that. We all have all nine types in us. Did you guys know that? We have a core type, so you're going to hear me refer to that, a core or dominant type, but we all embody all nine types, and that's something that's really beautiful, I think, about this tool also. Okay, the next thing I'm going to say, I have one more thing to say, and then we're going to really start to get into the meat of this, okay? Whenever I teach the Enneagram, it is mostly over multiple sessions, okay? So it's gonna feel like a bit of a fire hose today. That's why I left you with my email address. I want you to know I am an open email account to you, okay? Or if you wanna call, we can chat, et cetera, okay? It's gonna feel like a fire hose. Second of all, this is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to lecture at you all morning. We are going to workshop the Enneagram today. After each type, you're going to go in with your table and you're going to discuss the different things that are in that very last column of your quick reference guide, okay? And then throughout the time, I'm going to ask if you have questions. Please feel free to ask questions. I guarantee someone else is wondering the same thing. Sometimes I feel like I know this so well that I have like this, I have this understanding kind of always going on in the back of my head, but you don't have that same understanding. Okay, so feel free to ask, especially I'm gonna ask two or three different times, okay? So here we go, we're gonna get started. The first thing that we're gonna talk about is the structure of the Enneagram. There is four different parts to the structure, okay? The first part is the triads, okay? The triads consist of the type 8, 9, and 1. They are the gut or body triad, okay, or anger triad, some authors will say. These people experience life in their gut or in their body. I have a good friend, and one time when things were getting a little uncomfortable at around our mops table last year, I kid you not, her first thing to do was just walk out of the room. It wasn't a big deal. She wasn't trying to make a big fuss, but that's what she was doing in a time of stress. She needed to leave the room. She's a 9, okay? So that was how her body reacts. An 8 would be like, at you. They'd be like, what? And they'd want to get in a fight about it. And their cheeks might flush. Their heart might start to race, okay? A 1's anger is kind of suppressed. And I wrote this on your paper. They are resentful and kind of, they let things bottle up. I'm married to a 1. And I'll be like, gosh, where did that come from? And he gets angry, okay? So that it's in their body. The next triad is the 2, 3, and 4. That is the heart, the feeling. I'm trying to think of other words that are used. Or even the people-centric triad, people will say, okay? So the 2s are all about other people. They are so much about other people and about what's going on outside that they don't even know what their own needs are, okay? And they are almost like too many feelings. I have 2 best friends that are 2. And I'm like, I don't even know what I feel about that right now. I'll say that. And they're like, oh my gosh. And they could go on for days about like all these feelings. They feel like it's almost too much. The 3, and the 3, 6, and the 9 are very similar. They're like, I don't know what I'm feeling right now. I know I'm supposed to have feelings, but I don't. I don't know. And then the 4, God love the 4s. The 4s are all of like, how am I feeling? Very self-consumed. And like so many deep feelings, and we're always crying. We're always crying, and that's okay. And we're melancholy, and that's okay. But lots of deep, deep things going on there, okay? So that's the heart or the feelings triad. The 5, 6, and 7, that's our thinking or our head triad. Sometimes it's also the fear triad. The 5, it's a very cerebral type, core type. They are very much inside about it. They're not going to talk. They're not going to put it out there. They're going to conserve all of their information. They're going to keep kind of all of their headspace to themselves. The 6 is the, again, it's that in, out, in, out. They're like, worst case scenario, what if, what if, what if? They are the mom at Disneyland that has the biggest diaper bag for every scenario. That's another good friend of mine. I'm always like, good Lord. Like, she brings like the double bob, like full of stuff on one side, but like 3 kids walking, like, you know, and the other side is like just for the stuff, you know? And then the 7 is all about like, what's next, what's next, what's next? Just feed, 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 feed. Kind of that external coming in with their head knowledge, okay? So that's the triads. So you can kind of think, okay, when I'm in stress, especially, like, what do I do? Do I start to overthink things? Do I overfeel them? Do I get emotional? Do I want to run? Do I need to work out? Do I need to punch something? Do you see the 3 kind of, like, reactions there? That's our triads. The next thing we're going to talk about is subtypes. This is, I would say, a very... it's kind of been understated in the Enneagram world, but it's now becoming uber popular where people are skipping over wings, if you're familiar with wings, which we're gonna talk about in a second, but we're talking a lot about subtypes. So there's 3 subtypes: self-preservation, social, and sexual, or one-to-one. Okay, 3 different subtypes. For those 3 subtypes, there's those 3 in each of the 9 numbers. So I'm going to define that for you right now so you can kind of get a little bit of visual, okay? So self-preservation is all about survival and material security. They need to feel really safe. They are also the mom that brings all the stuff just in case. I have a friend that's a self-pres 3, and she always brings, like, extra jackets. And I'm like, what? Can you tell I'm not self-pres? I'm like, extra jackets, you'll be fine. You'll be fine, okay? They are very concerned with their safety. They're probably the ones that always know where the exit is. They are the ones locking the doors. So avoiding danger, maintaining that basic sense of structure and well-being in the world, that everything is safe and contained. Okay, so that's our self-preservation. So out of those nine types, there's a self-preservation subtype for all nine. Okay? And the reason why I'm explaining all of this to you is because if you go online or you take a test and it spits out two-paragraph blurb and you're like, that doesn't feel like me, possibly one of these three subtypes described to you under one of the core types would be more helpful. And I'm going to give you a resource to find that online too. Okay? The next one is social. Okay? The social subtype is all about recognition, belonging, social status, and structure. They are the ones that kind of always know who the who's who is in the room. Okay? They need to be included, and they will also include. They are very into community and belonging, and they're very, very much into power and who has the power and authority in the room. Okay, so that's social. Then our last subtype is one-to-one, or sometimes it's called sexual. This focuses just on what it sounds like on individual relationships versus the social is more concerned with the relationship as a whole, okay? So you, at your mob's table, if you're social, you might see that you're really concerned with your whole table, the whole room, the whole team of some kind, where this person is really just focused on the person next to them, okay? Or the person that they've connected with last week that they want to make sure that they touch base with. Interpersonal attraction and bonding is really important to this person. And I'm trying to think if there's any other. Yeah. They are also really into maintaining those relationships, where the social person might hop around a little bit more, and this person is like wants to keep that relationship maturing. Okay? We'll kind of talk about a little bit more about this as we talk about the nine types in a second. The next piece of structure to the Enneagram, you might have heard of wings, okay? A wing number refers to only the numbers on either side of your core type. If I'm a core type 6, I could lean and have a 7 wing or a 5 wing. I can't have a 2 wing because that's across from me on the diagram. Some people think that their wing is the thing that they might score second in a test, and that's not true. So just helping you understand that, okay? The wings, I believe, and in my education, you really can lean on either one. You don't need to be married to either wing. You get to access both traits, and they say they're flavors. Okay, they're a way to flavor your core type, okay? So that's what a wing is. And then lastly is lines, the lines of integration. And you can see this on our diagram, how there's these different lines that connect the different numbers. And I point this out to you because if you're not feeling like let's say you take a quiz or we go through this and you're like, I'm not really connecting. Well, it's like, okay, let's see where the lines of integration go. Well, if I'm a 7, my lines go to a 5 and a 1. Yes, a 5 and a 1. So I'd actually look at those traits also and see if I connect and resonate with those in the most simplest terms. Okay, there's a lot more to that, but let's just keep it there so that you don't feel like there's too much of a fire hose. Okay? In The Road Back to You, which I know Jill read this last year, this book is fantastic if you have read it or haven't. And actually, there's also a study guide that goes with it if you want to do it as a table. Our MOP steering did this last year as a group. We started in the summer, and then we kind of we went through a chapter or so every month at our monthly meetings. It was really fantastic. So all I'm saying is he goes into a lot more depth on this stuff in a really great way to understand. Okay, so we've talked about the structure. We've kind of talked about a little bit of background. Questions. Yes. Great question. So her question is, when it comes to the wings, does it have to stay within your triad or not, or can you dip outside of the triad? And the answer is yes, you get to go outside of your triad. And actually, yeah, so that's, it's again, a real, it's like, oh, I might feel, if I'm a seven and I go to an eight and you feel that kind of that anger or whatever, that's perfectly normal because you go to that side. Any other questions in the back? I'm sorry. Oh, what a great question. So her question was, are your lines of integration, would you notice similarities of people that you are in relationship with? And the answer is yes and no. You very well could. If you guys want to write this down, the EnneagramInstitute.com has this fabulous matching of types, and it's just about being in relationship with that type. It doesn't have to be a marital relationship. So it'll be like, what's a type one with a type three with? Or like, what's that like? Or a type seven with a type nine or whatever it is. And that has some really great insights. But really the answer is that you may find that you gravitate towards those people, but I guarantee there's other people in your life that aren't those types either. Something I've learned in my journey, a couple of things, is that one is that no number is off the table. Any type can be married to or be in relationship with any type. And in fact, in a workplace setting, they say don't use this for hiring. This is not something meant to exclude or push someone out of anywhere. What they would say is hire the person, then figure out their type and figure out maybe the best team for them to work with, et cetera. So it's supposed to be very inclusionary, not to exclude anything. Because if we are operating at our fullest developed selves, we can work with and be with anyone, right? Okay, was there another question? Yes. Isn't that great? That's a great question. So she's taken a couple online tests, it sounds like, and she's getting results that are all over the board. And so that's confusing, that aren't wings or related or whatever. So what I would say to that, one is I like the READETI test, R-H-E-T-I. It's $12. That's on the Enneagram Institute. It's $12 to take that one. That one's more thorough. But I'm guessing you're kind of scoring all over because Okay. Theory would say that we are only one core type. So I would just try to live in both and one will emerge. I'd also look at the shadow side, which we're gonna talk about today for each one. And the one that you hate the most is probably the one that you are. Any other questions? Yes. What are the wings again? Okay, no, it's totally fine. So you have a core type. Let's say I'm a core type one. I could be a one with a, or I could have a nine wing, or I could have a two wing. And if you don't know what that means, just kind of skip it for right now, but just a lot of people, I think, hear about wings, and so they always have questions about them. And I'm like, oh, don't worry about the wings. So that's honestly the only reason I bring it up is because I feel like a lot of people hear about them, and they're confused by it, and rightfully so, unless you know your core type. So don't worry about the wings, I would say. If you don't know your core type yet, put that to the side. Because like I said, in my professional opinion, you get to lean on either side of and access traits of both of those wings. Yes, question. Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, hey, no, you're not. She's asking about how her scores have come out. I want you to sit tight, and I have a resource for you. You're a two, it sounds like, and I would just stick with that. Twos and sevens are commonly mistyped, and then if you see that one of the lines of the integration is a one, so like everything you're saying to me doesn't surprise me, so I'm interested in your subtype, and that may help you really like connect with that too, okay? Which we'll talk about. Okay, any other questions? Okay, do you guys have discussion group leaders at your table? Yes, awesome. Okay, get ready, because we be discussing. Okay, get your quick reference guide out. Worked long and hard on this yesterday for you all and for myself, it was fabulous. We're just going to start with a core type one, and we're going to move our way down. I'm going to describe these different things, and I'm going to expand a little bit. And then we're going to get to some reflection. We're going to discuss each type. And this is kind of what I want this to look like. At your tables, if you feel like you resonate with this, like a particular core type a lot, speak up, okay? People need to hear what this living version sounds like. This is just words on a page. This is me on one perspective. Speak up. If you feel like you have someone in your life that is like this, talk about that. If you feel like you have a child that displays these tendencies, which when our kids are young, they are all nine types. It's kind of like love languages. Have you guys heard with love languages, you're not really supposed to figure out their type until they're like 8 or 10 years old? Because up until that point, they need all five love languages all the time. Of course they do, they're so narcissistic. And then one kind of emerges. Same thing with kiddos. You're kind of not supposed to type them or whatever. But I don't know about you, but my kids have, well, my six-year-old has been the hardest because he's six. But my girls that are older, I definitely know their type already. But I don't tell them that. You know, they don't need to like have this framework in their little brains yet. I feel like I'm trying to be a little more open-minded with it. But I get to know and I get to help parent them. So my middle daughter, I took her to therapy because I thought something was wrong with her. And then I started to learn about the Enneagram. And I was like, nothing's wrong with her. She's a four. She's emotional all the time. And she wants you to suffer with her all the time. I kid you not, and envy is the four's vice, and she always wants something that she doesn't have, the target's constantly moving. And I was like, oh, it was so nice just to have some language and some framework, and I just love on her now. And it's, again, a tool for compassion and empathy. Does she drive me crazy? Absolutely. But it's so different. I don't feel like that I'm doing something wrong in my parenting, I guess. So this book was super helpful for me in that. Okay, let's start with the type one. The one, married to a one. The one is our reformer, our perfecter, our moralist. Can we go to the next slide? Judge, organizer, and crusader. Sometimes when we see the word perfectionist, we think OCD. Don't think that. Anybody can be OCD. This is the person for you inside that's like has really high standards for yourself, and that probably bleeds out onto your expectations of the world, okay? And you're like, it's really important that we maybe look a certain way, or things are right versus wrong, very black and white thinking. So strengths in this, conscientiousness, self-control, responsible, moral, goodness. But the downside is that smoldering resentment I was talking about earlier, critical, puritanical. My husband goes, what is puritanical? again, that's just kind of that pious, proper, holier-than-thou type thinking, that you're doing everything right and everyone else is doing something wrong, that we can never live up to your standards. So what's the converse to that? What are the virtues? What are our paths to transformation? And I love the word transformation versus change. Transformation says to me, like, pivoting and turning away from something. Change sometimes just feels like a Band-Aid. So these are beautiful things that one can incorporate and that we can give to them. Grace, serenity, playfulness, and optimism, okay? And that actually, as you can see, the one has a line to a seven, and we're gonna learn about our sevens who are, I nicknamed the Peter Pans of the world. Okay, they get to access that. So I'd like you to turn it to your tables, and I want you, if you are a one, is it hard to receive slash hear criticism from others? This might also help you know if you're a one. When you do hear criticism, are you defensive? Even if you don't feel like you are a one, go ahead and answer that, because again, we all can relate to each of these types in one way, shape, or form. I'm gonna give you 2 minutes and I'm gonna set a timer, okay? And I'm gonna give you a 15 second warning, okay? Ready, go. Okay, 15 seconds. Okay, wrap up your thoughts and your sentences. So, each of our core types is assigned a deadly sin of the seven deadly sins fame, plus two. So a one, does anyone have a guess what a ones is? It's anger, okay? So that's kind of their vice. And what's so interesting to me about this model, that's the Enneagram is probably secular, okay? But we get to use it in any way we want. Like I said, it's a tool, is that it does look at this shadow side of us, but also it so beautifully gives us a way out of that. And again, that is the cool part of the more we know ourselves, and I'm not saying beat ourselves up because I think we do that enough as moms, but the more we know and can identify those things, we get to draw ourselves closer to who God made us to be. So that's kind of another note on the paths to transformation. Okay, let's talk about type twos. It's funny, whenever I'm talking to other groups of people, I always have to, identify the moms in the room, because I work with moms a lot as one, and I want you to do your best to try to not be a two. I think that what we our behaviors and our actions right now in this stage of life, this is all we're doing is helping, giving of ourselves, being there for someone. And so as we discuss this and talk about it, I feel like a lot of just young moms, they get typed as twos on the assessment because that's what we're doing literally all day. But remember, we're talking about the why. Okay, so let's talk about two. The two is the helper, giver, pleaser, supporter, the cheerleader. This is the quintessential people person. They have a hard time being alone. Warm, caring. This is in their most healthy place. They are generous. Okay, socially responsive, meaning they can read a room really well. On the opposite side of that, they feel rejected when they don't feel needed, which can turn into a martyr syndrome. Giving to others with expectation or that transactional thing. And so things to think about with this is, are you able to give, whether it's your time, your energy, your resources, whatever it is, and not be thanked ever? What if it was anonymous all the time? How does that feel to you? Does that feel okay? You're like, yeah, it's totally fine. I really don't need recognition. Or you're like, no, after a while, that would bug me. I have a two that's very close in my life, and she shall remain nameless. She is super transactional, that if I give to her, if she gives to me, I know I have to give back to her. So I've had to have some boundaries there, okay? And so that is, those are kind of those key things, I am kind of like that. Now, the deadly sin for the two is pride, and this is why. Twos think that they know everything that you need, okay? They think that they are the end-all, be-all. They are the ones to provide it or suggest it to whatever their little connection mind thinks, okay? So, paths to transformation, humility, acknowledging that you aren't the end-all, be-all, admitting that, I don't have this all together. I have one friend that's a two. Oh my goodness, she has such healthy boundaries. She'll talk to me and I can tell she wants to step in so bad and fix it or bring me that win. And she's like, okay, let me know how that goes. And I'm like, Natalie, good job. I'm so proud of her because I know that that's taking a lot of self-awareness on her part to not involve herself in meeting my need. Giving unconditionally and having an accurate view of self, that you are valuable and needed regardless of what you give, okay? So it's time to turn in and talk. Is it hard to meet your own needs? This is a hallmark thing for a two. But you know what, you guys? I know that in this stage of life that we're in, we're never meeting our own needs. We're always looking out for other people. So maybe even talk about that, what are ways that we can meet our own needs? But then really a good one, a question to ask, is it hard to give without recognition or being thanked? Okay, so here we go, 2 minutes again. Ready, go. Okay, 15 seconds. Okay, let's wrap it up. We're going to move on to the three because I don't want to keep you here all day. Okay. All right, the type three, they are the motivator, the competitor, achiever, performer. They are driven, productive, very A-type. The Enneagram experts would call America a type three nation. Okay, just kind of that go-getter, driven, ambitious, persuasive, results-oriented, efficient. On the weak side of that, though, is impatience, imitation, faking it, cannot lose, cannot fail. And that deadly sin is deceit, okay? And the sad thing for the threes is that they are not just deceiving others, but they are extremely deeply self-deceived. They believe that what they do brings them value and worth, okay? Their value and worth is found in what they do. Are you guys familiar with the Giving Keys? Oh yeah, because MOPS did partnerships with them, like with the words on the key and stuff. So the Giving Keys has an Enneagram line, and there's like a word that they use for each of the nine types. And for threes, it's worthy, okay? That they could be found worthy purely on their own, not by what they do. So their virtues are hope and truthfulness, and define the worth in who you are versus what you do. There's really cool like greeting cards out there with the same sentiment. There's like several artists online that do greeting cards. It's very, very encouraging. So I would ask you to ask around your tables, what's your definition of worth? Maybe you're not a three, so maybe you don't find worth in what you do, but where do you find your worth? Okay, and what gets sacrificed while you're achieving something? This would be a very three thing to answer, because threes will often leave things they love, like maybe people, because they're so task oriented sometimes, they'll leave them in the dust, or maybe be insulting, or too abrupt, because they're really focused on getting XYZ done. Okay? So, give you 2 minutes again, and ready, go. Okay, 15 seconds. All right, let's bring it back in. All right, ladies, we're gonna move on to the type four. Do we have lots of threes in the room or what? Okay, type four. So we're still on that front page of your outline or your notes. The type four is an individualist, artistic, tragic, romantic. They see themselves as the special one. So many musicians are fours, kind of that tragic romantic, you know, writing their love songs and such, okay? Yet they are creative, deep, emotional, expressive, intense. That is such a good word, intense. Both positive and negative? I don't know if that's the right wording. Imaginative, dramatic, abstract, and melancholy. And you guys, I put melancholy in the strengths column because fours see melancholy as a strength. They like that about themselves. They like that they get to be a little sad and it's okay. That feels good to them. It's a release. It's cathartic. Okay? The weaknesses of the four, feeling abandoned and rejected, constantly envious, constantly, and a romanticizes things. Probably makes things way bigger deal in their head. Something that's kind of, it's really hard to describe about a four unless you are this. And so if you connect with this type, please speak up at your table. They feel like that there's something like always missing in them and that they're kind of like always trying to find it, but it's never really to be found. But like that's kind of what sets them apart and makes them special. Unique is one of their favorite words. My daughter's a four. I'm always, oh, you're so great. You're like no one else. And I think she really likes that. She dresses really funny, but it's her, you know? So, path to transformation, contentment, right? Content with what you have, who you are, okay? And equanimity, which that idea of like, I don't need to be better than or less than, because they kind of just want to be, they are the highest highs, lows of lows, okay? So, one of their vices is suffering, and one author like has different ways that each of the three subtypes suffer. Like, one is they're internally suffering; they kind of don't tell you about it. One makes you suffer with them. One finds the suffering in everyone else. My daughter is the one that makes you suffer with her. So, do you feel like you're always suffering? And this is a great question, if we don't have any fours at the table or whatever, is how can you put the focus on others or other things, okay? When you're maybe feeling that pity or that selfishness. Not in the way of like trying to get attention off of you, but just when you're kind of feeling bad for yourself, okay? So we're gonna do 2 minutes for reals this time, not 3 minutes. I know we like to talk. What time are we done here, 11:15? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, ready, go. Thank you. Okay, 30 seconds. The what? Envy. Envy.
Yeah, it should say envious somewhere on there.
Okay, 10 seconds. I kind of feel like all toddlers are fours, right? Like highs, lows, emotional. Okay. All right, guys, turn over your notes. We're gonna talk about our type fives. This enters us into the head triad, and oh boy, the type fives, they are our most cerebral number on the Enneagram. They do a deep dive into whatever they are interested in. This doesn't mean like that they're a doctor or that they're on Jeopardy because they're smart about everything. They find these niche things that they're really into and they just go deep with it, okay? My sister is a five, and her thing is working out, you know? And she's a CrossFit coach and all of this, and it's great because she's my go-to with all that stuff, but she's just a wealth of knowledge. She just had a baby. And I got to be her wealth of knowledge. I'm not a five. But she was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, no, girl, it's fine. Like, she's just this expert in these, like, really specific things, okay? So the observer, the thinker, the investigator, the analyst, the specialist, okay? Yeah, specialized is a great way to see our fives. They're wise, private, curious, not maybe in a social way, like curious to get to know you. Yeah, they don't really care. They're more curious about information. They are your best researchers. Put your five on the stroller research for your next stroller purchase, okay? Conservation and reserved, okay, or conservative. And I don't mean politically or biblically. I mean that they conserve their resources. And honestly, not until I knew a five did I really understand this. So I'm the oldest of six children, and my five sister is the youngest, and she's always felt just a little different than the rest of us. We're all very social and out there. I have one sister that's an eight, one that's a two, a brother that's a one. Anyways, and she's this five, and she's the youngest, and I always was like, oh, she got labeled as shy growing up. But then as we had this framework and this language, it was like, oh, she wasn't shy. She just was conserving her energy. She always put herself to bed way before any of us, okay? Conserves her information. She's not gonna share anything unless you ask, okay? But then once she trusts you, she'll dialogue and she'll share what she has. I have another friend that's a five, and I just noticed like they are the ones that kind of put themselves to bed early, or they're the ones that need to dismiss themselves from a table and just go be alone for a while. Too much social interaction is really taxing on them. So their sin is avarice, which is a fancy word for greed, okay? Or we can see it as hoarding. The virtue to that is generosity. Just being generous with your information, your time, your energy. Don't go past your boundaries, of course, but maybe test them a little bit. Maybe go, oh, you know what? I can share about my life in this way. I can share about myself. Or it doesn't always have to be about information. Having that understanding and that connection. So my question for you around the table is, do you hoard affection, time, things, information? When you think about a five, though, don't think about a hoarder like we would see on a TV show. Actually, fives are minimalists when it comes to material objects. Do you want to know why? It takes them, like, my sister's the worst dresser, and she would tell you this. She, like, doesn't like to have a lot of clothes. She doesn't carry a purse. She barely carries a diaper bag now, good Lord. It's because it takes so much more of their brain power to put into those items. So, like, She has very few decorations in her house because that means you'd have to maintain those the knickknacks, like dusting around it, watering a plant, whatever it may be. So they're very minimalist. Same thing with like her dress. She's got her workout clothes and a few skirts. You know, it's like, because then she doesn't have to wash a lot. She doesn't have to worry about ironing, whatever it is. So they're actually minimalist, materialistically speaking, which is kind of interesting. It's like a little bit different than what we would think it would be, but it kind of makes sense also because they don't want to use their brain power into maintaining any of that. They want to put it elsewhere. So, hoarding information, et cetera. Next question, if so, how could you relax your grip and build in generosity? Especially if you see a kiddo in your life that has this, like, how, and this is just a great question if we don't recognize or see ourselves as fives, how do we build in generosity to our kids and teach them that? Okay, so 2 minutes. Oh gosh, we gotta hurry. I'm too chatty. Okay, go. All right, 30 seconds. Okay, let's wrap up our fives. All right, we're going to talk about sixes now. I'm going to guess that there's a lot of sixes in this room. Statistically speaking, six is the most represented number on the Enneagram. Fun fact. Sixes are dubbed most commonly as the loyalist, okay? They are loyal to their friends, to their school, if that's the authority figure that they've put themselves under, their church, like especially with the church, like if they're unhappy with like XYZ, they're like, and they won't complain about it, but it's like they wouldn't leave quite yet. It would take a lot for them to move on, okay? That like they feel committed, that's a good word. They're cautious, that troubleshooter, that what if person, what if this, what if that. Their strengths is they do think about the worst case scenario, faithful, supportive, reliable, dutiful. Weaknesses is that anxiety and being skeptical and not trusting maybe your gut, which again, you know, the six is in the head or the thinking triad. And one way to think of like the six is they're kind of like in, out, like they mistrust themselves, not necessarily you or their environment, but they mistrust their own brain. And the threes mistrust their heart. They don't know what to feel or how to feel. And then the nines mistrust their gut. So they're kind of in, out. They call those like the contra, those three that are like, they don't quite know, which if you feel like you're one of those, we can talk about that more. they are constantly needing security. So remember when we were talking about that self-preservation? I'm thinking, good Lord, a self-preservation six, that's like a double duty of needing that material security, bringing all your stuff, feeling safe, etc. So the six's deadly sin is fear, okay? And the virtue or path to transformation in that is not only courage, but it's faith. It's faith. It's the belief and the hope of what we do not see even. And that's a hard one. And you guys, this is true no matter if your God is your jam or not. Okay? It's faith. And then belonging also. And trusting that. So six. I said the opposite of fear is faith. And what are some ways to build that in your life is what I would like you guys to discuss around your table. And specifically, if you resonate with this number, please speak up. I think that people hearing your perspective is really important, especially in the journey of motherhood. I think that we're doubting ourselves a lot. And so this is a really good time to feel that belonging and connection. Okay, ready? Go. Okay, about 30 seconds. Okay, about 10 more seconds. Okay. We're going to talk about sevens now. Sevens are oh so fun. That is just part of their definition. They are optimistic, visionary, enthusiastic. Like I said, the Peter Pan, they kind of never want to grow up. And they want to just taste and sample everything. I saw one definition that said epicure. And epicure is someone that just, like food, just wants to have a little bit of everything, right? They're spontaneous, uninhibited. They love variety. They are energetic, curious, charming, adventurous, playful. On the opposite side of that, though, is a lot of impulsivity. They can be disorganized. Major problems with commitment, both big and small. Like, what are we going to do tonight? Should I marry this person or not? I have a 7 in my life, and it took him a long time to get married. He dated a girl for like 5 years, and he was older, a little bit older when he got married. And I was like, I respect that. You got to be sure, you know? But that was really hard for him. Hedonism, kind of that self-pleasure, okay? So the 7's deadly sin is gluttony. And I don't mean food, although that's how we think of it, and that might be true in some settings. It means of experiences. That gluttonous, like, can't get enough, okay? They want more, more, more. Can't commit to anything. Don't tie me down. So the virtue to that is sobriety. Sobriety, it's a calmness, it's a balancing or a removal. If something, the 7s actually are the most addicted prone number on the Enneagram, okay? And I'm not saying that if you're an addict, you're a 7, nothing like that. It's just a statistic. Yeah, it's a vice, okay? Something that they really struggle with is to sit with that pain. Sit with anything, first of all, okay? Focus, a little ADD. And I don't mean that flippantly. I mean that seriously. I'm really trying, okay, side note. I'm trying to, like, use mental health words, like, as they're supposed to be intended, not, like, flippantly, like, oh, they're so crazy or whatever. Anyways, I have a friend that's in mental health, and she's like, stop saying that. All right. Sit with pain and suffering. So these are the people that are constantly avoiding pain, and so they're going to have a hard time hearing anything negative that's in your life. They are the famous reframers. They're going to constantly, like, repackage something, like, at least it's not, or at least it's blank. Or one of my friends always, it'll all turn out okay. And I'm like, you, like, it's not gonna be, like, right now I am struggling. Would you just say, like, I see you struggling, like, I'm sorry you're doing that? So recognize that. I think that I'm gonna have you guys talk about that a little bit. So that is, like, quintessential 7, is that reframing, okay? But when they move to their line of integration, like, on their 1, they become more focused. They become more task-oriented versus just constantly pleasure-seeking, as well as their 5 line. They are experts in fields, and they do have great knowledge, super smart, but, again, not hoarding that either. So I ask you guys, this is something that would be so hard for a 7. So if you're a 7, your table would love to hear from you, or if you think you are, what would you do with a day of solitude? How would that feel to you? What goes on in your head right now when you think of that? If you're a 4, you're like, heck yes, this sounds fabulous, or a 9, which we'll get to you in a second. And then, what is a way you can practice sympathy? And this is all of us. This is a great question to ask, because I think we all experience pain differently. We all need to hear something different. So this is just a great for self-awareness. But those of you, if you think you're 7s, definitely share with your table. Ready, go. Okay, 30 seconds. All right. Wrap up your thoughts. We're almost done. Two more types. Okay, we're going to talk about that dominant type eight next. Eights. Eights are the commanders, the controllers, leaders, boss. Interestingly, with eights, they don't need to be in charge or in control. Get this, this is not written down. They just don't want to be controlled, okay? I feel like the people that are always like, I don't want to do the Enneagram because I don't want you to put me in a box. I'm like, okay, eight. Because in my opinion, we're already in the box. And to me, this is telling you how to get out, right? Those paths of transformation. They don't want to be controlled. That is their big thing. Like, get off me. One of my best friends is an eight, and my sister. They are self-assured, decisive, direct, assertive. They are that, I think a lot of maybe women that we see, female newscasters, I see them as that, at least like a picture of it. Driven, persistent, autonomous, they really want to be independent. Threes and eights look a lot alike, okay? Kind of like the twos and the nines, there's a lot of similar behaviors here. But the motivation is totally different. The three doesn't mind. They don't have to be in control. And they're more about quickly, efficiently getting it done. And the eight wants the control or not to be controlled. They are very direct. I feel like actually until I had some of this language, I was put off by the eights in my life, both men and women. I thought that they were abrasive or rude. But then once I learned that this was like just their style of communication, I was like, oh, okay, I get you. This isn't personal, this is business. Like, not business, but this is how you do life. And actually, when you engage with an eight similarly, when you mirror what they are doing to you, it speaks volumes of trust and love to them. Okay, they don't want you to back down. And I'm not saying they want to be in a fight, but that confrontation or that like head-to-head, when you walk through that with them, that is you building trust with them. And I've learned that with my sister big time. Weaknesses, they're controlling. They have huge trust issues. They trust no one. And lust is their deadly sin, and not in a sexual way like we think. That's why there's that parentheses there in your notes. They lust for intensity, okay? They lust for change. They're very seven-ish in this way, that they are constantly wanting more. So a path to transformation for eight is being vulnerable and kind of letting that soft side show to at least someone. I kind of like to think of these paths of transformation or all or any of this to be thought of done in your tribe, okay? So whether it's close friends or your spouse or siblings that are close, people that you trust, you want to show this side to or work on this stuff with. I don't necessarily think that when we're talking about all these attributes that it needs to be to like every rung of your social life, okay? So their path is to be tender, to be vulnerable, to say when life is hard, when they're having a hard time with something, and to let those in that love them and let those people love on them, not to fix it necessarily, but just go like, I see you, I hear you. It's a big deal. So my question is for our eights and anyone in the room is, what role does vulnerability have in being courageous and strong? How do the two work hand in hand? Because we don't hear that very often. We kind of are now, more like Brené Brown-ish. But that's kind of a newer thing, right? So let's talk about that around our tables for 2 minutes. And then we'll close. Ready? Go. Okay, we got about 30 seconds. Okay, let's wrap up. Wrap up our eights. We're gonna talk about nines. Yeah. The vice, lust. The deadly sin for the eight was lust. Nines, peacemakers, mediators, facilitators, often dubbed the sweetheart of the Enneagram. They're just so sweet. They sit at the top and they look down and they're just sweet. The nine, if you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm all of these things, maybe you're a nine. The nine feels like they can just relate with a little bit of everything. But the problem with that is because it's that they don't know what they want or who they are, okay? That's called merging, okay? They merge with others versus being a standalone person, okay? They are patient, non-aggressive, accommodating, easygoing, complacent, conflict avoidant, diplomatic, but on the opposite side, that passive-aggressive, the self-forgetting. The self-forgetting is another way of to say merging. Okay, that they don't know what they want, so they just go with what everyone else wants. But the resentment kind of comes in because then they're like, no, I did know what I want, but I just didn't voice it. That's on you, girl. I'm not a nine. Their deadly sin is sloth. Sloth. And where this comes in is they aren't necessarily physically slothful, but mentally. They don't know what they want. They don't know who they are. They have fallen asleep to their true self, okay? So, Pastor Transformation, stay awake to what's going on around you. Know what you want, okay? We have to close. I want to read this blessing over you that was read over the author, Ian Cron. And I don't know if you guys stay afterwards and chat or whatever, but you can discuss the question for our type nine, because I know there's probably lots of nines in here. But first, I want to do this and then close and let you guys go because I need to stay accountable to my clock here. I'm okay? Okay, well, I didn't, like childcare and stuff, like, I know the people in our church are like, get in here. So, a blessing for each one of you. May you recognize in your life the presence, power, and light of your soul. May you realize that you are never alone, that your soul in its brightness and belonging connects you intimately with the rhythm of the universe. May you have respect for your individuality and difference. May you realize that the shape of your soul is unique, that you have a special destiny here, that behind the facade of your life, there is something beautiful and eternal happening. May you learn to see yourself with the same delight, pride, and expectation with which God sees you in every moment. Amen.
Okay, I don't want you nines to feel like you got slighted because we did run out of time. So you take 2 minutes after I thank her and talk real quick and then run and get your kids, okay? Because I don't want you to feel that. But I really appreciate you doing this, Becca. I know that it's super duper hard to fit the Enneagram into 45 minutes. So I gave her the leeway to just take the whole time as long as she was letting you answer the questions at the table. That was your discussion time. And I should have booked you for 2 weeks. I really regret that I didn't do that.
Next semester,
we will have you back. Okay, so thank you, Becca.
Oh, thank you.
2 minutes for the nines, and then get those kids.
For having me.
Yes.
Thank you.